We've got a quite the challenge ahead of us today. A mountain of research, really, on gene expression. We're talking multiple omics data sets, all sorts of statistical approaches, but we're here to break it down. So instead of getting lost in the weeds, we're going to really try to zero in on like the key discoveries about how genes are regulated.
Yeah, and it's not as simple as just genes being on or off, right? It's way more dynamic than that.
Right.
It's more like, you know, imagine a complex symphony with all these different levels of control working together to fine-tune, you know, how much a gene is expressed.
Yeah, and we've got the research to back that up.
Exactly.
We're diving into work from Jill, Zoe, Kathleen, Javi, and Ariana, and they're each exploring all these different aspects of gene regulation. So let's start with Jill and her work on microRNAs, these tiny molecules that have a surprisingly big regulatory impact. What's fascinating about her work to you?
But, you know, it's one thing to identify microRNAs, but Jill's going a step further, right? She's using these tools like Miranda and Mirtarnasek to really figure out what those microRNAs are actually targeting. You know, what mRNAs are they actually interacting with?
So it's like she's eavesdropping on their conversation.
Yeah.
These molecules talking to each other.
And what's cool about that is that, you know, by understanding those interactions, we can start to really understand how microRNAs are influencing all sorts of processes within cells.
That's wild. Okay, so microRNAs are not the only players in this whole gene regulation game.
Oh, not even close, right? I mean, it's really complex.
So tell me a little bit about gene body methylation, or GBM.
Yeah, so think of GBM kind of like a dimmer switch for your genes.
Okay.
And Zoe's research is really interesting because she's looking at how GBM affects two main types of genes. You've got your housekeeping genes. These are the ones that are, you know, essential. They're always on. And then you've got your plastic genes, which their expression can be, you know, adjusted based on like the cell's environment.
So are you saying that like GBM functions differently depending on the type of gene we're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. And what's interesting is that, you know, we used to think that methylation and expression were just, you know, kind of simply inversely correlated. But Zoe's findings are showing that it's not that simple, especially when you look at these plastic genes. GBM might actually be preventing those genes from being expressed when they're not supposed to be.
So it's keeping them silent until they're needed.
Exactly. Like imagine if you had a light switch that you couldn't fully turn off. Right. It'd be kind of annoying, right? You'd be wasting energy.
Uh-huh.
So GBM is kind of like that. You know, it's making sure that those genes are only expressed when they're supposed to be.
That's wild. But how do we know that these methylation patterns are actually like functionally relevant? Like how do we know it's actually doing something?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, one of the things that I thought was really cool about Zoe's research was that she actually provided some really cool scatter plots.
Okay.
And when you look at the data visually, you can see these really distinct patterns of methylation between your housekeeping and your plastic genes.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And it suggests that, you know, these differences aren't random. They're actually, you know, they're meaningful.
So it's like this whole other layer of complexity,
right,
that we need to consider when we're thinking about gene regulation. It's not just on off. It's like fine tuning.
It's about fine tuning the level of expression.
Yeah.
At the right time in the right place.
And it gets even more complex, right? Because now we're bringing in like small RNAs and how they work with DNA methylation.
It's a dance, right?
Yeah.
All these different molecules are interacting with each other. It's really quite beautiful.
So what has Kathleen uncovered about this sort of collaboration?
So Kathleen's research is really interesting. She's showing that there's this really cool two-way street between small RNAs and DNA methylation.
Okay.
So on the one hand, she's found that microRNAs can actually target the machinery that's responsible for DNA methylation.
Whoa. So it's not just that they can like directly silence genes by targeting messenger RNA.
Right.
But they can also indirectly influence gene expression by controlling DNA methylation.
It's like they have multiple ways.
Yeah.
They've got their fingers in all the pots.
Exactly. Exactly. It's really remarkable. And then on the other hand, on the flip side, DNA methylation can actually directly affect how much microRNA is made.
Oh, wow.
So
they can silence the silencers?
It's this constant back and forth, this very delicate balance
Yeah.
between all these different regulatory mechanisms.
Okay, so we've got microRNAs, What about CERNAWS?
Right, so CERNAWS.
Where do they fit into all of this?
Kathleen's also been doing some really interesting work looking at CERNAWS and how they're involved in silencing these things called transposable elements.
Oh, right, those jumping genes, right?
Yeah, the jumping genes, exactly.
Which can be kind of bad news if they're not kept in check.
Yeah,
you don't want those things jumping around too much, right? It can really mess things up.
Right, right.
But the cool thing is that Kathleen found that CERNAWS can actually guide the machinery that methylates DNA to those jumping genes.
Oh, wow.
And basically silence them. And that helps to keep, you know, our genomes nice and stable.
So they're like the guardians of genomic stability. They're making sure that those jumping genes don't go too crazy.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting is that, you know, she's finding that different species might actually have slightly different ways of using CERNAWS to do this.
Oh, interesting.
But we can maybe circle back to that later.
Yeah.
But I do want to shift gears a little bit. We've been talking about DNA methylation, that dimer switch.
Yeah.
But Javi's research really looks at the structure of DNA itself.
Okay.
And how accessible it is for transcription.
So we're going even deeper now.
Yeah, we're going deeper into the nucleus here.
Okay, this is where histone modifications come in, right?
Exactly.
I remember learning about these things. It's been a minute.
Yeah, so.
Maybe a little bit of a refresher would be helpful.
Of course. So think of your DNA, right? Mm-hmm. Like a really, really long thread.
Okay.
Okay, and now imagine that this thread is all wrapped up around these spools, and these spools are called histones.
Got it.
Okay, so now imagine that you can add like little tags to these spools.
Okay.
And these tags are like signals that tell the cell whether or not a particular section of DNA should be open or closed for business.
Okay. So it's controlling access to the genetic blueprint, basically.
Exactly. So when the chromatin is open, that means that DNA is accessible and genes can be expressed. But when it's closed, it's all packed away.
Right.
And those genes are silent.
Got it. And so these tags, the PTMs, those are like specific instructions.
Exactly.
On these histone spools.
Precisely. And they can tell the cell to, you know, wind the DNA really tightly.
Okay.
Or to keep it loose. And that influences whether or not genes can be expressed.
Wow. So these tiny little tags on these histones can actually have a really big impact on what a cell actually like becomes.
It's incredible, right? And what Javi's doing is he's using this really cool technique called PCA analysis to look for patterns in these modifications.
Okay, so instead of looking at just individual modifications, he's looking for like trends.
Yeah, exactly. It's like he's creating this map of the epigenetic landscape.
Wow.
And what's really cool about that is that he can start to see how histone modifications might contribute to making a heart cell different from a liver cell, for example.
That's amazing. It is incredible to think that these tiny little tags can have such a big impact.
I know, it's amazing.
Wow. Okay, so we've thrown a lot of information at our listener today.
Yeah, just a little bit.
And we're just getting started.
Just a little bit, yeah. We're just scratching the surface here.
So let's take a quick pause and then we'll come back and we'll keep going deeper into this world of gene expression. So we're back and we're ready to really kind of dive into this whole world of multi-omic integration with Ariana's work.
Yeah, she's really taken on, you know, this huge task of trying to bring together data on mRNA, small RNA, DNA methylation, really trying to get that complete picture of how these different layers of gene regulation are all interacting.
And from what I understand, she's using this software called MixOmics to do this. And it sounds, honestly, it sounds a little bit intimidating.
It can be a little intimidating, but it's really powerful. Like, imagine if you were trying to understand, I don't know, like a city.
Okay.
And you were only allowed to look at like the transportation system.
Okay.
Or the power grid. Or the communication networks. You know, each one of those gives you a little piece of the puzzle.
Right.
But to really understand how a city works, you need to see how all of those things interact.
Right.
That's kind of what Ariana's doing with MixOmics, right? She's taking all these different omics data sets and she's integrating them to really try to see this whole web of interactions.
So instead of just looking at genes in isolation, we can see the bigger picture, the network. What kind of insights is she hoping to gain from doing that?
Well, one of the things that she's really interested in is identifying these things called regulatory hubs.
Okay.
So these are molecules that seem to be like really highly connected
okay.
to a lot of other molecules in these networks. And so the idea is that these hubs might be really important for controlling the activity of a lot of different genes.
So these regulatory hubs kind of sound like they could be really important for understanding like complex diseases.
Oh, absolutely. If we can figure out what those hubs are
Yeah.
and how they're regulated, then we could potentially develop new therapies that target, a whole network of genes.
Right, instead of just going after one at a time,
Exactly.
which is kind of, how a lot of drug development has been done in the past.
Right. It's like, taking a sledgehammer when what you really need is a scalpel, right?
Right.
So yeah, Ariana's work is really exciting in that sense.
So is she focusing on any particular species in her research?
She is. She's actually really interested in the three species that you're looking at. In fact, she's already started analyzing some data from Apocra, and the preliminary results are actually really interesting. She's finding some unique correlations between certain microRNAs and methylation patterns and the expression of genes that are involved in.
Ooh, don't leave me hanging. This is relevant to our
Right,
listeners.
sorry, of course, genes involved in sort of mentioned specific process or pathway.
Okay, yeah. That's really interesting.
Yeah, so it seems like all these different regulatory mechanisms that we've been talking about are really interconnected.
Yeah, and they're all talking to each other. It's
Exactly.
like this big conversation that's
No,
happening.
it is. It's like a big dance party in the cell
Yeah.
with all these different molecules, kind of bumping into each other and influencing each other.
Yeah, I love that analogy.
And that's what makes this field so fascinating, right?
Absolutely.
Is that it's not just about, one gene, one protein. It's about how all these things are working together.
So Ariana's really focused on trying to tease apart this network, right?
Exactly, yeah.
But Javi's taking a little bit of a different approach, right?
He is, yeah.
He's using the PCA analysis to look for patterns in these histone modifications,
Exactly.
which again, if you remember from earlier, those are like the tags that can be added to DNA
Right.
to signal whether a region should be open or closed for transcription.
And what's really cool about PCA analysis is that it allows Javi to look for groups of cells or tissues that have similar patterns of these modifications.
So instead of just looking at individual modifications, you can look for trends, patterns.
Exactly. It's like, he can look at hundreds or even thousands of these modifications
Yeah.
and see which ones tend to go together.
Okay.
And that tells him something about, the epigenetic landscape of those cells.
It's like creating a fingerprint almost for
Exactly.
different cell
That's
types.
a great way to put it.
So, I mean, this could be really useful for understanding like how cells differentiate,
What the
how a
heck?
stem cell decides to become a heart cell or a liver cell or whatever.
Yeah, and it could also be really important for understanding diseases like cancer.
Right, where you have this kind of uncontrolled cell growth.
Exactly, where the epigenetic landscape gets all messed up.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, this is really, we're really just beginning to understand the power of epigenetics.
It's such a fascinating field and it's moving so
Oh,
quickly.
absolutely. Yeah, it's hard to
Yeah.
keep up with
I
sometimes.
can imagine. I can imagine. Well, I'm starting to feel a little overwhelmed by the complexity of all this.
Yeah, it can be a little overwhelming, but that's what makes it so interesting, right?
It does, yeah. But let's maybe take a step back for a second and revisit Kathleen's work with the small RNAs and the DNA methylation.
Okay, sure.
Because we were talking about how microRNAs can target the machinery that's responsible for DNA methylation.
Right, and she's found that that's actually really important in mention a specific physiological process or disease state.
Okay.
So it's not just a theoretical thing.
Right.
It actually has real consequences.
It's actually affecting, how our bodies work or how diseases develop.
Exactly. And in
Yeah.
fact, her work suggests that if that interaction between microRNAs and DNA methylation gets messed up, that could actually contribute to
Yeah.
mentioned specific symptom or
Oh.
characteristic.
Oh,
So it's really important to
yeah.
understand how these two things are talking to each other.
Absolutely. So we've talked about microRNAs, we talked about siRNAs. What about those jumping genes, those transposable
Yeah,
elements?
so she's actually finding some really cool differences between the three species that we keep talking about
Okay.
in terms of how they keep those jumping genes under control.
So different species have different strategies.
It seems that way, yeah. Like, for example, in Zirnus, mentioned one of the listeners' species, she's finding that sirtuates seem to be really important for silencing those transposable elements in, mentioned cell type or tissue.
Okay.
But then in CRNS mentioned another the listener species, it seems like DNA methylation might be more important.
Interesting. So they both have the same goal.
Right.
Which is to silence these things, but they're using slightly different strategies to do it.
Exactly. And you know, it makes you wonder if maybe those differences in how they regulate transposable elements might actually contribute to some of the differences that we see between species.
Oh, interesting.
But that's something that, you know, she's still looking into.
Right. Another deep dive.
Exactly. Exactly. But for now, maybe we should shift gears a little bit and go back to talking about gene body methylation.
Okay, let's do it. So Zoe's research, she's been really digging into this whole idea of gene body methylation, or GBM.
Yeah, and as we've touched on, it's not as simple as just saying, you know, methylation equals silencing.
Right.
And her work on the housekeeping versus the plastic genes.
Right.
Really, really highlights that.
Yeah, it's like you were saying, it's like the lights in your house that are always on.
Exactly.
Yeah. You don't necessarily want them on a dimmer, right?
Yes.
You want them on.
You need those to be on all the time.
Exactly.
But then you have other lights, you know, lamps and things that you want to be able to control the brightness of.
Right, right.
And it seems like, you know, that's kind of what's going on with the plastic genes, right?
Yeah.
They need to be able to react to changes.
Exactly, yeah. And Zoe's research is sort of challenging a traditional assumption, right?
Yeah.
This whole idea that methylation and expression are always inversely correlated.
Right.
It's not quite that simple.
It's more nuanced than that, yeah.
Especially when we're considering different types of genes.
And the scatter plots that she provided, I think, really, really drive that home.
Yeah, it's like we've zoomed in on the data.
Exactly.
And found this whole other layer of nuance.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really, really fascinating stuff. And it really just highlights, again, for me at least, this idea that gene regulation is incredibly intricate. We've got microRNAs, DNA methylation, histone modifications, and they're all intertwined.
They're all talking to each other.
Yeah.
It's like this big web.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
It's all connected.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so fascinating, right?
Absolutely.
Is that it's not just, you can't just look at one thing in isolation.
Right.
You have to look at how all of these things are working together.
It's like a symphony.
Exactly, yeah.
With all these different instruments kind of playing their parts.
And sometimes one little note can change the whole melody.
Absolutely, yeah. And it really does underscore, I think, the importance of taking this kind of multifaceted approach.
Yeah.
Like Ariana is doing.
Exactly.
To really get the full picture.
Yeah, you can't just look at one piece of the puzzle, you have to look at the whole thing.
Exactly, exactly. Speaking of Ariana's work, she's been busy analyzing data from these three species that you've mentioned, right?
She had, yeah.
Including Apultro, which, you know, again, is particularly relevant to our listeners today.
Yes, absolutely.
What's she finding?
So she's already starting to find some really interesting you know, evidence of how these different regulatory layers might be interacting.
Okay.
In a species-specific manner.
Okay.
So, for example, in Apultro, she's identified this potential regulatory hub, and it's a microRNA that seems to be influencing both DNA methylation patterns and the expression of genes that are involved in mention a specific process or pathway.
Wow. So a single microRNA that has the potential to kind of like orchestrate this whole cascade of downstream effects.
That's the idea. Yeah.
It makes you wonder how many other like regulatory hubs are out there.
Oh, I'm sure there are many, many more.
Yeah.
That we haven't even begun to uncover.
Yeah.
And that's part of what makes this whole field so exciting, right?
Is that,
you know, every time we look, we find something new.
It just keeps getting more and more complex.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this has been incredible. We've really gone deep.
We have.
But I think the big takeaway for me, and hopefully for our listeners, is that we're really just scratching the surface.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We've learned a lot in the past few decades.
Right.
But there's still so much more to learn.
So much that we don't know. But thanks to, you know, amazing researchers like yourself and Jill and Zoe and Kathleen and Javi and Ariana, we're getting closer, I think.
We are, yeah.
Yeah.
We're slowly but surely piecing together this incredibly complex puzzle.
Well, I for one am very excited to see what the future holds.
Me too.
And with that, we will sign off. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.
Yeah, thank you. This was fun.